My name's Kevin. I'm glad you could join us today for our series, Messy Spirituality. We are talking about messy faith today. I actually had a friend come up to me before the service, and he said, I think a little tongue-in-cheek, but possibly not, how messy are you willing to let it get? And often when things are tongue-in-cheek, there's a bit of a serious element to it. And I've been reflecting on that as we've been singing. You know who you are. So I think this is what we're going to do. We all react to things in different ways. We process things in different ways, and there are different times of our lives where we need different things. And we don't have to force anything, but if you are feeling today that you are in need of prayer before communion, I'd like to make myself available right there. Right there. My name's Kevin. I know I said that again. And we'll have prayer before communion. And Dan Bennett, right here, give a little wave there, Dan, is going to help serve communion in the capacity that I normally do, which is going out and serving people that can't make it to the front. Is that messy enough for you? Mark Twain famously said this: they were good in the worst sense of the word. And I wonder, have you ever met people like that who were good in the worst sense of the word? What comes to mind? To me, I think of do-gooders, people who do good but want everybody to know it because they're so good. Or think of people who maybe like to condemn people, have a streak of self-righteousness and put people in their place and remind them of the rules. And on the one hand, the public face is all good. But there's a hidden face. The one at home, the one in private, the one inside. But what would happen if all that stuff, all of that hiddenness that we put down inside, deep down inside, what if it was exposed? Jesus came to take down barriers, to destroy dividing walls, to tear down the false categories that we so easily put up. And the passage we're looking at today begins a big section in the Gospel of Luke that continues all the way into the book of Acts. It's a section that's about Jesus demonstrating the coming of salvation in all its fullness to all people. Now, this isn't new, this idea, this hint that Jesus would do this. It was signaled earlier in Luke, in the Song of Mary, in Luke 1, 46 to 55. We know this as the Magnificat, the Song of Mary, where she bursts into song because she learned that she's pregnant with the Messiah. She celebrates that the categories will be changed. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. And also Simeon, just a little later, the devout and righteous old man who knew by the Holy Spirit that he would see the Messiah, that he would live to see the Messiah, he praises God, noting that things will change, that categories will change, walls would be torn down. He says of Jesus, this child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel. And Jesus himself, for those who are listening, warned and hinted and said directly that things were going to change. Status wouldn't mean the same thing. He said that he would break dividing walls. He would change categories. He would give dignity to the lowest of the low. And he would see things differently than the world sees them. And actually, in Jesus' first speech, he talks about his agenda, this reality that's known as his inauguration speech at the temple. This is in Luke chapter 4, verses 16 to 30. The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressors free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. Then in his ministry, he lived out these words that were quoted from Isaiah and makes them reality. Gives these words of Isaiah their ultimate meaning. He ministers and cares for those with leprosy. He gives them dignity. He reverses the usual status. Most kings spend time with the mighty, the powerful, the rich. This king spent time with the diseased, the tax collectors, the rejected, and others whose existence was on the margins of society. He was all about the demolition of barriers, the barriers that separated women and men, children and those of high status, rich and poor, and notably for this passage, Samaritans and Jews. Jesus' disciples were normal people, people who decided to follow Jesus. But these disciples, they still want to be the people who put those lines in the sand. They still don't get the extent of this kingdom reversal. So today we come to a place where the disciples are with Jesus, and he's on his way to Jerusalem, where he will reveal himself as this new king of this new kind of kingdom. A king of new status, of broken boundaries, of dividing lines erased. But we see the disciples, they still seem to want these lines. They're living by the old rules of old kingdom, rules of status and power. Rules that say that their new king, this Jesus, is a guy who will be a champion to punish people they don't like, to put up walls to protect their status. The disciples still want simple, black and white categories. Categories that serve their agenda, instead of taking into account the heart of the Father for all people, despite the category that they might fit into. So today's verses are really curious. They're set in the context of Jesus' ministry, which is set in high gear, and he's making his way towards Jerusalem. And it's a passage full of hidden agendas, prejudice, and a history of relationships gone bad. This is Luke chapter 9, verses 51 to 56. You can follow along with me on the screen if you'd like to. As the time drew near for him to ascend to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. He sent messengers ahead to a Samaritan village to prepare for his arrival. But the people of the village did not welcome Jesus because he was on his way to Jerusalem. When James and John saw this, they said to Jesus, "Lord, should we call down fire from heaven to burn them up?" But Jesus turned and rebuked them. So they went on to another village. Strange. Strange passage, isn't it? So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem because he knows that it's in Jerusalem that he will reveal himself as the Messiah. So they stop in this village for the evening, and this village is in Samaritan territory. Oh, and one thing about these Samaritans, they weren't friends with the other Jews. They had a different doctrine. It was all about where the center of the faith should be, and the Samaritans didn't believe it was Jerusalem, but somewhere else. So these people didn't like each other. And they especially didn't like the idea that Jesus, who said he was the Messiah, was headed for Jerusalem and wanted to stay with them on his way there. It's kind of insulting. So the Samaritans were not in a mood to cooperate. They told the disciples they weren't welcome in their town, and there's really no surprise there. I'm sure the disciples would have predicted this. So we have the disciples reacting in a way that demonstrates a deep impulse to label people and put them in categories, to make simple black and white decisions, not based on love, but based on prejudice
and hatred
and years of harbored resentment
and competition and suspicion. Two of the disciples, James and John,
they were really mad that the Samaritans wouldn't show them hospitality. They were furious. But maybe a little bit happy.
A bit vindicated.
Because they have their secret weapon with them.
Jesus, the Messiah.
So they storm up to Jesus and they spit out a very undisciple-like question.
Lord, should we call down fire from heaven to destroy them?
Their question gives a whole new meaning to the term evangelism explosion. Let's enter into this a bit.
Personalize it.
Imagine that we as a church are engaged in a mission to reach our neighbors. And they don't respond how we like, so we call an emergency prayer meeting to pray for these people. So the prayer meeting starts.
Oh Lord, those people we invited to Alpha, the people who were not ready to come, we ask you, we beg of you, would you please send a fire to destroy their homes? Would you send disaster on them, kill their families, punish them severely? Oh Lord,
thank you.
You are good God. You are just.
They shouldn't have said no.
Their impulse, their desire to see these people destroyed is not an example of mature discipleship. There is something really wrong about it. And we might say that it was a total failure of faith, a total failure of understanding
of the faith journey.
A total failure of understanding that faith isn't neat and tidy and doesn't fit into simple boxes. Something's really missing with these guys.
Because on the one hand, their desire to destroy these people who don't get it shows a total lack of understanding of the faith. You know, the Bible is full of examples of people that don't fit our boxes of faith. People who are on the one hand heroes, but on the other hand are just so dysfunctional, you cringe. And you know what I like about the Bible? It's so messy. It's full of messy stories and messy people. And I love the fact that in those uncomfortable stories, things aren't edited out. There's no attempt to hide these awkward moments.
The messy people are just there, on display, like Noah. Wasn't he on display? You remember that story? Everyone thought he was crazy.
He was a little strange, but he was also a man of amazing faith and great courage, strong will.
So think of this. Against a backdrop of unrelenting ridicule, he built an ark in a desert because God told him to.
No one believed him,
but he persevered and kept going. So the rains did come, the world flooded, it was destroyed, and then the waters receded.
So he left the boat, got drunk, and got naked. Or got naked and got drunk. I'm not sure which order it was in. Either way, it's pretty weird. He's laying there in his tent, drunk and buck naked. His behavior was on display for all to see, his sons and us.
And we don't talk about this little bit of messiness that much. We don't tend to unpack this issue to undress it too much, I'm sorry. Couldn't resist. But it's there. We talk about his triumphs, but we don't talk too much about his losing battle with wine. I mean, maybe being cooped up on a boat with a bunch of animals and your family while the whole world and all of humanity is being destroyed isn't something to sing a song about or talk glibly about.
Shouldn't that sort of thing take its toll?
Maybe walking out of an ark onto a decimated earth with millions of people dead is something that kind of hurts.
Maybe life is more complicated than we think. Maybe slum survivors, but the proper way to say it is flood survivors, can have bouts of depression and loneliness. But why should we be surprised? Isn't that what life is like for the rest of us? Full of its ups and downs and challenges? And it turns out that all of the biblical characters were a complex mix of strengths and weaknesses. David, Abraham, Lot, Saul, Solomon, Rahab, Sarah, Jacob, Judah, Samson. They were God-loving, courageous, brilliant, fearless, loyal, passionate, committed men and women. They were also murderers, adulterers, immoral, unstable people. And the New Testament characters were not much different. Look at who Jesus hung out with. Prostitutes, tax collectors, adulterers, murderers. Jesus' disciples were not models, they were committed, but troubled. There was infighting, suspicion, selfishness, laziness. Most of the time they didn't understand what Jesus was talking about, and they had no idea what to do next. They were men and women who could be gentle, holy defenders of the faith one moment, and insecure, mentally unstable, mean, vengeful zealots the next, as demonstrated here. You might say that Christianity has a tradition of messy faith. And in our story today, there are two things that are significant for us as we move forward in our faith journeys. First, Jesus rebukes the disciples for the desire to see fire and brimstone where he wanted something else. He rebukes them for their misunderstanding of his mission and how they see people. They were wrong. Second, they go on and continue their journey. Even though they were these messy people, Jesus accepts them, their mess and all. They continue the journey together. It's as if Jesus' tolerance for this dysfunction is limitless. I find these two things incredibly challenging and incredibly encouraging. Because for us today, we continue to make the same mistakes that the disciples made. We want things in easy categories. We want to take the easy way, the tidy way. But really, life is messy. Faith is messy. And Jesus is still rebuking people for putting up walls where we should be tearing them down. For putting in boundaries where we should be reaching out past those boundaries. And I wonder if we could maybe take a moment to reflect on our lives, on those walls we put up. Can you reflect for just one moment silently on those walls that we put up when we should be taking them down? I may not have given you enough time because my list could be pretty long. But here's the incredibly encouraging thing about this story. Despite our messiness, Jesus accepts and continues to journey with his disciples, with us. Despite how we mess up, despite our messiness,
Over and over again, Jesus wants to journey with us. He sticks with us through thick and thin. And when we take these two points together, we're left with this reality. Life is messy. Faith is messy. But the sooner we face this reality and accept it and are honest about the mess in our lives, the sooner we can continue on our journey and grow. I like the way Eugene Peterson puts it in his book. What's the name of that book? That's the good book. This one's not as good. A Long Journey, something like that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He says this: when we sin and mess up our lives, we find that God doesn't go off and leave us. He enters into our trouble and saves us. Whether we like it or not, we all have a messy faith. And what we need to do is expose the mess. Romans 3:10 says, we all struggle and are all a mess. There is no one righteous, not even one. This is the truth, and we need to accept it. And I shouldn't be telling you something that's surprising to you. If you're surprised that you're a mess, I wonder why. Paul tells us this in the book of Romans. He says that we're all messed up, all bent, we're all twisted. We all struggle in our own way. And the essence of messy faith is not to pretend before God and before others that it's not messy. The essence of messy faith is the refusal to pretend that it's not messy. There's a myth out there about the spiritual journey, about the Christian journey, and it is destructive. It says that to journey, we should put on our best faces and present as flawless. Behave before you can belong. But today, as we engage in this journey called life together, we want to expose the myth of flawlessness, to come out of hiding and stop pretending. But I think we can go even further than this, because it's in the mess of life, in the mess of faith, that we actually grow. In the words of Mike Iaconelli, he says, is the workshop of authentic spirituality the greenhouse of faith, the place where the real Jesus meets the real us? This messy faith is the workshop of life. The mess of life is what this journey is all about. You know what messy faith means? It means that you can be encouraged because Jesus is going to walk with you and transform you and meet you in that mess. The good news is, those of us who are trying to reconcile our faith and the brokenness of family relationships, that's where Jesus is going to meet you. Expose the mess. Those of us who can't seem to shake addictions, no matter what they are, sexual, food, drugs, alcohol, recreation, money, this is where Jesus is going to meet you. Expose that mess. Those of us who can't seem to shake the ideas that our faith is weak because we're plagued with doubts. Doubts about the existence of God. Doubts about the Bible. Doubts about the church. Doubts about hope. This is where Jesus is going to meet you. Expose that mess. I'd like to ask you to reflect once more about the mess in your life. Where is the mess in your life? Would you just reflect on that for a moment? Messy faith is the workshop of authentic Christianity. Sometimes I think we don't want to live in a mess because we don't understand what faith is. We think it's an unshakable thing, a thing of facts and figures, a thing of certainty and certitude, a thing of perfection and tidiness. But faith isn't like that. It is hope in things unseen. It's not found on the confidence of certainty. It's based on the reasonable trust of both the Jesus event and the person of Jesus. It's based on God's revelation in our lives through encounter and through the Word of God. It's based on hope and how Jesus has been revealed to us by His body, His people, in the here and now. It's based on a decision. That even though we can't see what's over the horizon, we are committed to heading that way. Our relationships and churches and groups and just life. There are those of us in those things that are just paralyzed by guilt, feelings of inadequacy and failure. And these things cripple the faith journey because they don't fit into that nice box of clean faith. But we need to expose the mess because faith is messy. And when we can accept that, the real work of us becoming more like Jesus, deepening our faith, that can begin. Did you know that you are unfinished? In other words, we are on this journey, and it's okay not to be at the finish line. The faith journey is about us being incomplete, imperfectly living life for God. And when we seek God, Jesus begins to take shape in our lives. He starts changing us. This finishing process is a lifetime work. And it's never finished until we meet Jesus face to face. And you know the good news of this mess we call life, this mess we call faith? Jesus prefers the lost over the found. He prefers the losers over the winners. He prefers the messy instead of the unmessy. And if your faith is tidy, get real and get messy. Because your eyes aren't open. And if your faith is messy, welcome to the journey which Jesus will see through to completion. I'd like to call the worship team up. We're going to move into communion. Actually, the worship team for now is Max. He's going to play his cello for us. I'd like to call the servers forward as well. I'd like to reflect on Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, as we enter into this celebration of all that Jesus wants to do in our lives. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. This table is an invitation for us to accept and celebrate and reflect on what Jesus has done.